Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Juneau police are asking for help finding two teens in Juneau who went missing this morning and may have access to a firearm. According to police, 16-year-olds Leotis Phillips and Zoe Clark reported missing from their homes on Kanata Street and Teal Street in the Mendenhall Valley earlier this morning. Police believe the pair are together. Police describe Phillips as an Alaska Native male, approximately 5 feet 5 inches tall, weighing between 140 and 160 pounds, with long black hair, typically in a ponytail, and brown eyes. He often wears a purple bandana around his neck and a black hooded sweatshirt and brown pants. Police describe Clark as a white female, approximately 5 feet 6 inches tall and weighing roughly 140 pounds. Images of the missing teens can be found with the story on KTOO.org or on the Juneau Police Department's Facebook page. Police are asking the public to help locate them, but said not to approach or contact them because of their potential access to a firearm. Anyone with information about the pair's whereabouts can call JPD at 907-586-0600. Anonymous tips can be made through JunoCrimeLine.com. The University of Alaska Southeast has more than doubled the number of states non-resident students are coming from. That's according to UAS Chancellor Aparna Palmer during an interview on KTOO's Juneau Afternoon on Thursday.
This year, we are welcoming students from nearly 30 different states. Last year, 11 states. This year, 29 states.
Palmer credits those numbers to the school's new tuition policy and targeted recruitment. UAS dropped out-of-state tuition and began offering in-state tuition rates to all students starting this fall semester. The effort, called Alaska Unlocked, is an investment in drawing more people to the state and bolster enrollment. This year, the school is seeing an estimated 36% increase in out-of-state enrollment compared to last year, the Alaska Beacon reports. The rest of the University of Alaska system will drop out-of-state tuition next fall. In addition to the new policy, Palmer says UAS got support from the Board of Regents and the Education Trust of Alaska to recruit and target states like Colorado, Minnesota, and Idaho. That's in addition to Washington State, which UAS has continually recruited in. Palmer says students from these states in particular tend to stay in Alaska and are a part of UAS graduates who join the workforce.
Over 85% of our students, in fact, last year it was 87% of our students, when they graduate, stay in Alaska and are employed in Alaska within 1 year of graduation.
She adds that non-resident students are more likely to be traditional age college students.
So these are students who come, they live in the dorms, they live on campus, they participate in on-campus activities, and they tend to take more credits per semester.
That's compared to the majority of students who come from in-state. They're mostly part-time students, work in the community, and have families. The average age of UAS students is 30 years old. Palmer says the number of new UAS students from in-state has increased as well. Classes at UAS started August 24th. The school is still accepting enrollment with professor permission this week. UAS also offers some courses like career education in Northwest Coast Arts that begin later in the semester. The University of Alaska Board of Regents is meeting in committees and as a full board in Juneau on Wednesday and Thursday. And you're listening to Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Setkwai Vera Starbird is an Emmy-nominated writer who has written six plays and multiple episodes of shows like Molly of Denali and Alaska Daily. Starbird is the librettist for Kuthlagau, an opera about the 1802 battles between Tlingit people and Russian invaders in Sitka. That means she wrote the script, which language teacher Chene Lance Twitchell translated and composer Ed Littlefield put to music. And Starbird says the idea came from Sealaska Heritage Institute's Rosita Worrell.
She came to me at a play premiere at Perseverance Theater 8.5 years ago and was like, someone should really make the battles of Sitka into an opera. And I was like, oh, that'd be amazing. Like, wow, that'd be really cool. She's like, yeah, someone should really write that into an opera. And I was like, yeah, like, couldn't you imagine? She's like, someone should definitely. I was like, are you saying I should write this as an opera? She's like, what a great idea. It was a very not subtle way. And she'd had the idea from years before. She'd always thought that would be an amazing thing to do. So I do want to include that this whole idea came from one Tlingit woman's mind. I'm Vera Starbird, Setkwai Het Duasak, Shenedi Hatsati, Dakdain Tan Yadi. I am the librettist for the opera, which means I wrote the script or the English lyrics. It's an entirely indigenous cast, and I've never worked with this many Tlingit people on a single project either. Like, I generally need to, like, add up how many, but it's Clinkett weapon specialist, Clinkett choreographer, Clinkett language upon language upon language experts helping the singers. It's Clinkett dancers who contribute their pieces to that. Clinkett, my mother, who's making some objects, and my brother just did a little costume piece. He wove a little costume piece. We just have so many people that have been lending their little pieces of expertise to it. It was never going to be a sort of Western opera of what they call like park and bark, where you stand and you sing, and maybe you move a couple feet and then you stand and you sing. And it's beautiful to hear, but there's not a lot going on the stage, and that's just not Clinkett. Like, if you've ever seen a Clinkett performance, there's so much movement, there's so much drama, there's so much action going on visually for you. For Clinkett people, I mean, performance art was illegal for generations. The people who held on to these and kept the knowledge of how to do it, who did it anyways and defied those laws, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our ancestors held on to these things, passed on how to do them. So bringing in performance art to anything, to whether it's bringing it to opera or whether it's bringing in at celebration, is something that is a statement in itself. There has been this renaissance, like starting in the 70s with my parents' generation, of bringing them back to the level that they were, which was expert master craftsman, master artist level. Our generation now gets to play with that. And while we're still honoring all of the tradition that came before, so this kind of performance art is in many cases the first time those are all coming back together. Those were individual for so long because they had to be. Like, you couldn't do this publicly. And now to see them all as they were meant to be, as we did them for thousands of years before with Clinkett fiber artists, Clinkett carvers, Clinkett painters, Clinkett musicians, Clinkett songwriters, Clinkett storytellers. It's all coming together. And that part I get really emotional about, as far as, wow, they really held on to these things so we could bring it out. And that's a direct message of the opera itself. Because, yes, it's an opera about our history, but the art of it, the opera itself, is a statement for now. Like, this is who we are, who we have always been. Our history, our stories have always been performed. They've been performed big. They've been performed in amphitheaters. They've been performed with huge production value. And that's what we're bringing back.
Sutkwai Vera Starbird speaking about how Kootlegau, or the Clinkett opera, came together. The production premieres at Thunder Mountain Middle School on Friday, September 11th. The show runs through September 20th. And Petersburg's Borough Assembly has asked the local planning commission to take formal action on a subdivision request made by the regional tribal government. And that's after the commission failed to consider the request in July. KFSK's Taylor Heckert reports.
Vice Mayor Jay Stanton-Greger said at a recent meeting that with no formal action, the assembly doesn't know why the planning commission decided not to take up the issue.
The mandate of the planning commission is to give a ruling one way or another. If they so choose to reject this, I would like very clear directions as to why, so that we can, as an assembly, either agree or disagree with their findings.
Stanton-Greger was speaking during last Monday's Board of Appeals meeting. The discussion follows nearly a year of controversy over the company who is filing the subdivision request. Title Network, the Central Council of Clinkett and Haida Indian Tribe of Alaska's broadband company, is planning on building three communications towers in Petersburg. One is already erected on Mill Road, and construction for a second has begun at Papke's Landing, a neighborhood about 10 miles south of town. The project is controversial. For the last year, residents have repeatedly testified about their concerns with new towers in town. In June, the assembly agreed to sell a small piece of borough-owned land near the town's fire hall to Title Network for the third tower location. The property is part of a much larger borough-owned lot. In order for Title Network to buy that portion of the lot, the larger parcel must be subdivided. In July, Clinkett and Haida submitted a minor subdivision request to the Planning Commission, which failed with no second. In other words, there wasn't support to move it forward, so there was no discussion or vote. Clinkett and Haida appealed the decision, which went before the Borough Assembly, acting in their role as the Board of Appeals. Assemblymember Bob Martin questioned whether sending the request back to the commission would be effective.
But I wonder what the point is, because we've made the decision to sell this land fully aware of the intentions, and I think we're just going to have a lot of drama in the next few months.
In response to Title Network's appeal, eight community members, including one sitting Planning Commission member, submitted written comments. All opposed the subdivision request. The Borough Assembly unanimously approved sending the subdivision request back to the Planning and Zoning Commission. The next Planning and Zoning meeting is September 8th. In Petersburg, I'm Taylor Heckert.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 53 degrees and raining. It looks like we'll see some more rain this afternoon and tonight. Tomorrow looks like it'll start off raining, 70% chance, but that goes down to a 40% chance over the course of the day. Wednesday, there's a 30% chance of some showers in the morning, and then it looks like it'll be clear with a high of 63 degrees. Thursday and Friday also look clear and sunny, with temperatures reaching the mid-60s. This is KTOO. Thank you for tuning in.